Welcome back, everyone, for the final episode of A Convenient Parallel Discussion. We are joined for the sixth and final time by author James Green Jr., Eric Christensen of the Moogly Fan Club, and then I'm actually going to go ahead and name the Buffalo Ghostbusters that were participating in the podcast this whole time. We have Justin Williams, Brent Hollingsworth, Josh Brown, Chris Burns, David Farrell, and myself, Dan Lively. A little bit bittersweet, guys. I don't want this to end.
Same.
But jumping right into chapter 11, which covers Answer the Call, I do want to go ahead and I default back to, because everybody has their opinions on Answer the Call, but I default back to the Bill Murray quote from chapter 6, which I'm going to read off. There are certain comedians who'd have a hit movie, and I think, yeah, it's terrible. I didn't like it, and I decided only stupid people could laugh at it. Now I feel whomever makes anyone laugh is okay. It doesn't matter if someone is laughing at someone else, but not at me. What's really important is the laughter. Answer the Call might not be your favorite. I don't really care. It makes some people laugh, and good for them. Good for them for enjoying whatever they enjoyed about that movie. But let's jump in. Who's got something to talk about on chapter 11 about Answer the Call?
I'll start because I thought there was something obviously funny right from the start of the chapter. How they talk about how rushed Answer the Call started. You know, they were moving so fast. And I believe the quote was, we didn't know what we were doing, or was it we couldn't focus on what the ghost looked like or something like that. It was
that was an interesting quote.
I had it pulled up. I wish I knew I could say it better than what I did. But how they didn't focus on how the ghosts were going to look originally, and that was something they got a lot of criticism for. You know, being compared to Eddie Murphy's Haunted Mansion was a big thing.
They tried to use practical effects. You know, they talked about the subway scene dressing a real person up, but then they just over relied on CGI to get them the rest of the way through.
Oh yeah. But that was interesting because I actually, the point you made, Justin, the subway ghost, I totally thought that was just green screen and a special effect. I didn't realize they actually had a guy on set for that.
Same.
They actually ended up selling masks of that guy, if you can believe it, too.
Did they really?
Yeah, when Answer the Call came out, there were two Halloween masks, maybe three. It was a Rowan prototype face. And then the prisoner subway ghost.
Yeah, I think I remember that. One of the other things I found interesting with the marketing was they had this whole idea of like a playset for like her Holtzman's lab.
Oh, that would have been the unreleased one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was, but like Paul Feig was like, they're like trying to come and get ideas and they haven't had them yet.
They should have been there 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like the Holtzman Labs would have been a cool accessory toy set to have.
There's a lot of coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is true.
Well, yeah, it seems like the communication just wasn't there in terms of getting everyone on the same page. Obviously I've talked about it before, but, and it's been talked about to death, too. I mean, everybody talks about, you know, the first trailer in the 30 years ago line.
Yeah.
And the fact that that made people think maybe it is connected, and then it obviously wasn't.
Just poor marketing on their part.
Yeah, Ivan liked that. By reading, Ivan was all for it.
Yeah.
Even
they just, you know, like I said, it was poor marketing. It was just weird how they both wanted to be their separate thing, but now that trailer said, yeah, we're kind of in the same universe. It just misled people with that is all.
Yeah. I mean,
even Melissa McCarthy, but I think it had said, she's like, why would they do that?
Yeah.
Because when I saw the first trailer, I thought it was in continuity back when it first came on. I was like 30 years ago. I was like, okay, wait a second.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I mean, I liked how you know, like hashed together the equipment was. Like it looked like it was put together in somebody's apartment, you know, just
kind of. I loved that. Yeah.
Just thrown together. Definitely. And even to this day, I mean, there is a big fan base for the equipment itself. And I love how it is hashed together. I mean, I think it's pretty well received in Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed. I think Dan and Nair can attest to that.
Yep. I like that the Proton Pack started out as like this giant cart with this giant. Slowly, like, and you know, even the scene with Mayhem, the wands were different, the packs were unfinished, and they were a continuous evolution of the packs throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Yep. I thought that was genius. Honestly,
kept evolving, and I really liked that. I enjoyed that part of the movie for sure. Yeah, I just thought that was a really funny quote about, you know, oh, what's in the slime? What's in the slime? Oh, it's safe while the crew's all in like hazmat gear.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Like, oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
James, did you see it on opening weekend, or were you kind of like waiting and trying to see what anybody else said?
No, I saw it on opening. I think I saw it the night it came out. I was like, I felt like there's no way that it's gonna like, I don't expect it to like blow my mind or like, be like the greatest thing ever. I also don't expect it to be the worst thing ever. I feel like it'll probably be like right in between. And you know, the first time I saw it, I was like, this is funny. This is good. I don't know why everyone's like, you know, being so crummy about it, you know. It was like very different in tone and style from the other movies. But like, you know, I didn't, and the people wouldn't believe me then. That was the other thing. People didn't believe me when I told them that. Like, when I said, yeah, it's good, you should check it out, they were like, really? Like, no, are you being serious with me? This is a problem that I've had my whole life.
Oh, you're a corporate shill.
Well, people, when I'm trying to be genuine, people often think I'm being sarcastic, which has happened the whole time I've been alive. So I'd be like, yeah, it's good, check it out. They'd be like, you're doing it again, aren't you? You're screwing with me. I'm like, no, I'm serious. And it was like also the only, like, you know, I had never seen a Ghostbusters movie on like premiere night before. So I was like, I gotta do that.
I saw the 2016 film and I remember saying it's not going to be a classic like the original was, but it's not the worst film I had ever seen. And I had just, I would say that to people. It's like, I kind of enjoyed it, and people were just like, no, you didn't.
Yep.
And I'm like,
liar.
I can't win with this movie at all. It's not a classic, but it's definitely the worst movie I've ever seen.
My opinion, and I still stand by it to this very day. I mean, I didn't see the movie until it was on digital, and there was like a free digital copy that came with the DVD set. At first I was one of those people that I wasn't wholly interested by it from what I was seeing, but I think had they set it in a different city, in a different setting, I think it probably would have been a little bit more received. Like if it was, I don't know, Ghostbusters San Diego, Ghostbusters Orlando or something. I think the fact that they threw it in New York City in
Ghostbusters Boston.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we see the firehouse, we see all the OG actors, but in different characters. It just felt like, you know, in a way it felt like a slap in the face to some of the fans. You know, I mean, that was my kind of takeaway from it. But, you know, everyone is going to get different takeaways from it. You know, but the fact remains that it was a Ghostbusters movie. Right. It was something. It kept the franchise going and alive. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't think it should be anything that's kind of like people look down at it. It was something.
You know? That actually goes along with one of the notes that I made. The filming in Boston, to me, actually made it feel out of place. Because they kept claiming it was New York, but they were showing different places that are kind of famous in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it just didn't feel like it was in New York City.
Well, and they also had that one ghost that was wearing all Red Sox gear and it just like yells, Yankees suck.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, what the hell am I doing in New York? It's like
the baseball ghost towards the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
But James, and in the book about the extended edition, and I think that the extended edition is the better version of that movie.
I would like to see the Ivan Reitman's cut of it, since he did some of the editing, but then they're like, nope, we're not going to do that.
I will say, though, after being in New York City this summer, where there was only second unit shots happening with the Ecto-1, I can totally understand not filming in New York City, because, they just immediately draw a crowd no matter what, and there's so many people around trying to catch a glimpse of filming.
I think it was noted in the book the reason they didn't film in New York was there was no studio space. They didn't have any studios.
Yeah, that was it. Fun fact, by the way. So Tom Rothman, the guy who took over as president after Amy Pascal, he is the brother of John Rothman, who played the library administrator in the initial Ghostbusters.
Nice.
Wow. That's really cool.
There's a bit of trivia for you.
Fun facts from
write that down for the next book.
You got to release that in the updated copy. Just that one line. Yeah. Fine.
And I'll be sure to credit you. I'll start the sentence. My good friend Dan Lieberg, who's also one of the most handsome men.
A second convenient conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Inconveniently parallel.
Inconvenient. But yeah, so anything else on chapter 11 before we move towards Afterlife?
It was kind of fun to hear about Hemsworth's involvement and how he was, you know, he was used to being not really a comedy actor, but this kind of, you know, after that, I think it said in the book that this kind of led to Thor a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
For Ragnarok.
Ragnarok, you know, yes, the third.
Yeah, since it had more comedy in it. And to be honest, the fact that, you know, he was used to being handed scripts, you know, these are your lines, this is that, and Feig was telling him to, you know, ad-lib, and the end result that we got from him, Kevin's my favorite part of the movie. You know, I love the graph, I love the logo scene. And I cannot help but laugh, because I've been there. I've been in Kevin's shoes doing that exact thing. It was showing logos, whatever. So, you know, when he shows the Ghost Girl logo at the beginning, the 7-Eleven logo, the hot dog logo, I mean, I laugh the whole time. And then at the end, I don't know why it gets me so much, but when they pull Abby, or when they're pulled out of the portal and he just walks around with a sandwich, and they take it away and he catches another one, then the water bottle and the muffin. I laugh every dang time that happens.
Okay. I get it when he like, they say something like, don't listen, he goes, I won't. And I'm like, oh my god. And I don't know why I laugh at that one, but I laugh at that one.
His glass is not actually having lenses.
Yeah.
I do have one more note for Answer the Call. Any Ghostbusters is good Ghostbusters. As much as some fans may not agree with this one, I loved hearing about how it inspired a lot of young fans, particularly female fans, to get into the franchise and see that anyone can be a Ghostbuster. You don't just have to be a guy. Anyone at all can become a Ghostbuster.
Amen, dude.
Even a gorilla.
That was definitely a good quote.
That's exactly how I feel on. I can't wait for my daughter to see it. You know, she's just a baby now, mm-hmm. but I can't wait. Even my boys. I got 2 4-year-old boys. They love the action scenes in Answer the Call. When they're flipping ghosts around, mm-hmm. just the pilgrims and all that at the end, they love it. So I 100% agree with everything Chris just said.
I mean, it was interesting also to see, speaking of saying Answer the Call, how they had the subtitle added on for the at-home release. When I got the Blu-ray, it was like, this says Answer the Call on it, but it was just Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's kind of like the studio was pushing for that subtitle the entire time, and then he's like, nope, you can put it at the end of the credits. But then the home release got all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the studio.
Yeah, it's definitely part of that whole disjointed thing.
Yep. Yep. You know, I know some of the chapters, or was this chapter or the previous chapter that talked about the actors actually, you know, reacting to all the blowback and the YouTube, the trailer having like 670 down likes as opposed to 270 likes.
That was shocking. Yeah, like, wasn't into YouTube at that time, but that's shocking.
Back when YouTube actually showed the dislikes publicly, which they stopped doing.
Mm-hmm.
I loved how in the movie they must have went and did some reshoots and they added some of those comments and like, ain't no women gonna bust no ghosts or something like that. Like,
oh, that was our one swear word. Dang it.
Yeah, I'm editing that, of course, but I thought that was really cool with that movie. I'm like, oh yeah, stick it to them right there with that line.
I saw all the stuff they gave out and I wish I was there. They released that pin that was actually a patch at the same time. I'm trying to get my hands on one of those things. It was just the logo, but it said like 2016 on it. Wasn't that from that event? But it was actually.
I know AMC had some pins.
Mm. Yes, I did get those. The little tiny ones.
AMC had some pins, and I know Cinemark had the canned Ecto Cooler.
Yeah, I went to Cinemark specifically to buy
Ecto Cooler. A case.
Yep.
Yeah, I was trying to like report online like every few weeks.
Yep.
So that was one of the great things about 2016 was all the re-release stuff. The Ecto Cooler was available for the first time in how many years? We got a refresh on new toys. They brought back GB Classic toys.
Yep.
Yep.
James, do you enjoy the fine taste of Ecto Cooler?
Well, you know, it's been a while. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Ecto Cooler is delicious, but it's been a long time since I've had any. And, you know, sometimes I see recipes online, like, you know, make your own Ecto Cooler. And I feel like
a few of us were able to taste some back when the Afterlife premiere.
Oh, yes. A couple of you guys got the Afterlife bottles.
Yep. Mine's right back there.
I drank it.
It was beautiful.
Justin and I were sitting together at the Afterlife premiere, and we passed the bottle around.
They were canoodling. No, I'm kidding.
They'll bring that back for future Ghostbuster movies.
It would be nice.
I hope so. With the delay for Firehouse, I'm hoping there's actually time to sync up a lot of releases like that.
One of the delays, we go into Afterlife. One of the delays for Afterlife was Baskin Robbins was supposed to have a marketing thing for that green slime topping, and they never did the marketing for Ghostbusters because it kept on getting delayed.
I'd like to say hi to Graham Snyder of Ghostbusters of Glasgow in Scotland.
Ooh,
thank you for tuning in.
Oh, nice.
That green topping stuff was horrible, by the way.
Oh yeah,
it was a berry flavored. I ended up sending my open expired bottle to Jason at Ghostbusters News. I emailed him and was like, "Hey, you're used to eating an expired Ghostbusters related food. Here you go, have at it."
Yep.
Here's some stuff that might give you botulism or some kind of stomach issue.
I love that though. Like Jason gets open expired products.
I asked him first. I was like, "Hey, I got this bottle of the slime. Do you want it?" He's like, "Yeah, send it to me."
Yep. I just ripped off the label, threw it in my archives, and that was the end of it. You know, it's a shame that because you saw some of the Baskin Robbins promotional stuff for Afterlife that just never came out.
Yeah,
you know, mini pops, eating stuff, the Funko Pop that did come out,
the blue Twinkies,
Twinkies. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, you know, something I wish I had managed to write more about in the Afterlife chapter was about the product delays and stuff, because I contacted General Mills. I contacted General Mills and I gave him my whole spiel, like, hey, I'm writing a book and da 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 da, and I'd like to talk to you about the thing, and they just sent me back nutritional information about the cereal. And I was like, oh no, I guess you must have misread what I wrote. I can get the nutritional information. I'd like to talk to you about the delays. And they're like, Ghostbuster cereal is available at these stores. I was like, okay.
It was like an auto reply email, right?
Yeah, or it was like AI or something. I don't know. Or it was just someone who's like, I'm going to play games with you. So
they're like, no, we understood your question, but we're just gonna put a quote of the nutrition facts in your book. Yeah. Yeah.
If you have to deal with any other cereal at General Mills, though, let us know. They actually make it right in Buffalo.
Yes,
We have their factory. There is a General Mills factory downtown Buffalo.
I remember finding it in this grocery store for the first time. That cereal, I grabbed 20 boxes.
Ate all 20 that day.
Filled up the bathtub with it.
And that's the story of how Brent got diabetes.
Speaking of diabetes, I mean, let's not forget that we got Stay Puffed marshmallows as part of the market.
Yeah. Where are you going with this? Speaking of diabetes.
The hunt for the marshmallows.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Which also ties back to 2016, because back then we actually got those green and pink marshmallows when that movie came out. So
from Campfire,
we got marshmallows.
Yeah.
Was that Campfire for those too?
I think
it was. Yes. I think they did all of them, I think.
Yeah. I like the Campfire actually did the Stay Puffed logo and then made an additional logo for the mini ones.
Mm. Yep. Yeah.
That was very
cool. Those were exclusive to Walmart, right?
Yep. Yeah,
yes.
I never seen them anywhere else. I still have two unopened bags that they will never ever be opened.
Yeah, I got them somewhere.
I got mine on my bookshelf there.
Mine are flattened, preserved, and all that good stuff in a sleeve.
Mine are sitting over in the Stay Puff bowl I got from Cinemark with the extra Stay Puff head or the mini puff heads from the figures that came out sitting on top of it.
Nice. Those marshmallows were the freshest marshmallows. I'll never forget it. Because you know they had to have been packaged semi-recently. So when I ate one of those, oh my God.
Well, you know they're probably going to have another run for Firehouse too. So.
Oh, I hope so.
We can only hope so. Okay, but I got to say, going into Chapter 12, my favorite anecdote, Jason Reitman was not once, but twice offered, dude, where's my car?
Yeah.
What?
Dude, where's my career?
I love that Jason joked about selling out one day and making Top Gun 2.
Yeah, that was... talk about a dated quote. It's like...
Yeah. Top Gun Maverick released about 6 months after Afterlife to incredible success.
Yeah, it was a massive hit.
Yep.
Top Gun Maverick and Ghostbusters Afterlife have a lot in common, actually. I mean, they were both supposed to be released during the pandemic, but because of Top Gun Maverick 2 moving from November 19th to summer of 2021, the IMAX and large format screens were now open, and that's why Ghostbusters Afterlife moved back that week so they could take over those large format screens. So it's kind of interesting the connections between Maverick and Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yeah. Now, I did love Paul Rudd like talking about being a fan of the movies on set and like falling out of actor mode and into fan mode sometimes when he would see a prop or whatever. Because all I could picture in my head was Gruberson in the police station when he sees the proton pack for the first time and just goes, whoa. I'm just like, I don't think Paul Rudd was acting there.
No. But he, Rudd is Gruberson. Gruberson is Rudd. And, hey.
There you go.
Maybe Paul Rudd is an amateur seismologist. We don't know.
But
so moving with Afterlife, the everything that happened with the pandemic, does everybody remember the day that it got postponed for the first time? Like, just how did everybody feel like with that when it got moved?
Go ahead, Eric.
All right. So if anybody's a Simpsons fan, if you ever saw when Homer makes the pig in the barbecue and it gets launched and it's going and it goes through
the bushes.
It's so good. That was me the whole time. Like, we're going to stay positive. We're going to do this. It's going to happen. And eventually, it was all good. I mean, it wasn't like crushing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit, but they let the anticipation build, in my opinion, because I can't, at that point, I can't remember how many, did we see a trailer yet by then?
No.
Yes. Yes.
We had a teaser in
2019 when the first trailer hit.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it was still, it might be just worth it. Worth it. Just give us more merchandise in the meantime.
What was your guys' thoughts with the initial teaser trailer with the barn?
I lost my mind.
Right.
Same. Yep.
Well, because especially the way that happened, the fact that the Entertainment Weekly article came out, and I mean, our chat blew up with everybody reacting to that of like, okay, is this real? Is it going to get the rug pulled out from under us again? All this. And then, it's like, is this even real? Or was this some sort of like
fan
TMZ type article that just got, caught up in wildfire or whatever?
We've got this covered.
And then the next day it was like, wait a minute, did they film the whole movie in secret? Is it coming out next week? What's happening?
Yeah. I mean, well, here's
everything with that, everything in secret there, even like the script being put out and only three Sony executives knowing about it and the meetings that they had. It's like, maybe they really kept a lid on everything for Afterlife. Yeah.
Even Logan Kim reading the script, there's no names, just boy, girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Super secretive.
But how many times would you say you watched the trailer that first day, though? Let's be honest.
Too many. Watch.
The one in December or the barn one?
The barn, the teaser.
The barn, the teaser one. I was at work when that happened. I had to take a break.
Bathroom break? Yeah.
Yep. I was in training and I remember saying, oh, I gotta go, guys. I'll be right back. I'm not feeling very well. Yeah, I watched.
Down on the bathroom door. Josh, you okay in there?
Just one more time. Just one more time.
I actually had on that one. I worked at a movie theater at the time. Oh. And about 15 minutes after that trailer went online, I had that on every single movie to play throughout the entire day. So I was doing my due diligence to go and check every single auditorium during the trailer.
Well it's your job. I mean, you had to.
James, what was your reaction to the trailer?
Well, the barn trailer was what was actually what got this book started. So it was pretty much like, because I was working on a book about the Chinese Democracy album by Guns N' Roses, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And I was really starting to be like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then that came out and it got me all excited about Ghostbusters just as a fan. Then I was like, wait a minute, a few years ago, I wrote a whole proposal for a book on Ghostbusters. Maybe I should try to do that again. And I asked my wife, I was like, you think that's a good idea? You think I should ditch this Guns N' Roses book and try the Ghostbusters book? She's like, yeah. So I was like, all right. So I dusted off. And of course it was like super exciting and like, oh my God, like, are they really and like Dan said, they made the announcement and then the next day the trailer came out. I was like, okay, so they're not screwing around. Like, this is really, so I like dusted off the proposal for the book I always wanted to do about Ghostbusters. And then sent it to the publisher. I was like, do you think we could give this a shot now with the thing going on with this? Like, it seems like people are going to be excited about Ghostbusters maybe for the next year or so. Like, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. Let's do it. So it was like exciting as a fan, but also it was like, oh, this, like, I'll have the opportunity to do this Ghostbusters book now. And that was very exciting.
Okay, that's my new favorite anecdote about Chapter 12. That's awesome that this teaser trailer is the reason that we have this book.
Yeah.
And even in the book, it mentions how big Jason was into practical effects for the movie.
in that teaser trailer, the Ghostbusters title, when it comes across, was a practical effect. It wasn't.
I think summer 2020 was not Ghostbusters, was that it? But summer 2020. Yeah, they did with like a smoke and actually cut it out and everything.
Yeah, that, because I remember them trying to going through the. I remember reading something somewhere where they went through the archives, finding that original lettering to replicate.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ivan's comment: it needs more slime. Just in the
I love that. That's the thing they fought the most about.
More slime. More slime.
Look, Dad. His name's not Muncher. His name's not Slimer. It's Muncher. He's gonna eat more stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first time we saw Muncher. Jeez.
Okay. So speaking of Muncher, though, the reveal at the very end of the movie, when you see the blue arm come up to help Phoebe, did anyone else in the moment think it was Muncher?
No.
Not for a second.
No. Get him off the big picture. Move him down.
I know that I'm probably in the minority, but I also know I'm not the only one, because one of our other members, Merritt, I heard his kid in the theater go, Muncher! So... Yeah, it might be a 12-year-old kid that agrees with me, but I'll take it.
You know what? It kind of would have been funny if Muncher had, because Muncher is not really in it a lot.
Yeah.
But it would have been funny if he had showed up at the end, but he was doing like Pac-Man with the traps that were in the ground. He just started eating away at the traps. And so they had to bust him and Gozer at the same time. Just to be a big pain in the butt.
Oh, that would have been a cool scene. Him just coming along in a trap, and all of a sudden, one of the old guys grabbing them in a thrower and sucking them into.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
James, not to put you on the spot here, but I mean, you know, the whole purpose of this is to talk to you about the book. So
put you on the spot.
I don't know if I maybe misinterpreted this or not, but you didn't necessarily seem to love the mini puffs or the way Egon was used. Am I reading that?
You are reading that right. That's fair. I mean, to me, like the mini pups, it's just like, whatever, like they're going to, you know, they're going to use the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man somehow. They have to. And that's just the way, it's like one of the most iconic parts of this franchise. You know, it's instantly recognizable. They're going to do something with it. And to me, it didn't really, I don't know. So I don't remember what I said in the book, but just thinking about it, it's like, yeah, to me, that was like one of the least interesting parts of the movie, the least engaging to me. And as far as using Egon, it was like, I think they were in an unfortunate spot where it's like the only interesting thing you can do plot wise, really, with a new Ghostbusters movie is one of the Ghostbusters is dead and is a ghost, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, unfortunately, Harold Ramis has passed. Mm-hmm. And I think that I loved everything that they were doing with Egon as a ghost throughout the movie before they showed him in full form.
Okay.
And like, I thought it was really cool that like she would play chess with him or whatever. You know, he was communicating, you know. But yeah, I just kind of felt like it was almost like, I mean, it was a great technical achievement. It was very impressive that they made it look like Egon, or what we imagine Egon would look like now. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was a little overkill. And I felt the same way about some of the examples that I cited in the book, like in Rogue One. Like, I think Rogue One is a really good movie. They didn't need to digitally reconstruct Peter Cushing.
I'll agree with that.
And it's also...
Well, I hated that. Might ain't the Flash.
Oh yeah, I heard.
We're not going there.
But yeah, to me, it was just I felt also, I think I may have mentioned this in the book. I felt like I enjoyed so much of Afterlife of just the kids and that story. I was actually kind of, when they were getting to the part when I knew the original Ghostbusters were going to show up, I was almost like, oh please, no, give us a few more minutes of just these kids, like please, you know. Because I thought it was cool. I thought what they were doing was really cool. So I felt like they almost didn't need that. But, you know, as I'm saying this, I don't want anyone to think like that's like, I think Afterlife is a good, I think Afterlife is a good movie and I enjoy it. And it's not like that. It's not like the mini pups or Egon like curdles everything for me. You know, it's just like, you know.
Oh yeah, no, it's
even Bill like the mini pups.
Yeah.
How did you react emotionally? Because I know for me, that opening scene when you see, you know, Egon pass, I was teared up. As well as when Muncher grabs the wand. When Egon grabs the wand, and as soon as you see Egon, like I'm balling at that point. Were you emotionally into it at all, watching it?
You know, I can't say that it really like I. It was almost like the opening minutes of Afterlife were almost too. It was almost like really hard to adjust. Like I am watching like Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah,
it was, and it was like I know they were. There, you know, I wouldn't say it affected, it didn't make me sad or it didn't affect me, but it was like, whoa, okay, this is what they're doing. Like, you know, yeah. It was more like that. It was more like, this is what they've established and let's see where they go from here, you know?
Maybe a bit of shock and awe at
the realization. Yeah, definitely.
Like it wasn't hitting me yet.
It was definitely sort of like, it was definitely. Like I don't know. I guess I was like, I can't believe that they're starting with this. I can't. And I thought a lot of the I was really taken with the kind of the style of the effects and the shots and stuff in that opening sequence.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't. I couldn't. I wasn't. No, like you said. Yeah, I guess it was just shock and awe, and just more like. So and then I. Yeah, and then I got so invested in. The kids, I thought the kids were so good, and their interactions and the way that everything was set up with them, and so yeah, I'm
rambling. I can tell
your interpretation of it.
I can tell you for me, there's somewhere in Sony's publicity archives, there is some rather embarrassing footage of me bawling after seeing it.
Are those the ones I sent to you, Dan?
No.
No? Okay. I remember there being pictures from that event that I thought I'd sent out, like, that I've randomly
found. Oh, no. I mean, there's a full-on interview of, like, me and Justin talking to a camera, because we were lucky enough to be at New York Comic Con and saw the surprise screening. So just, yeah, the emotion of actually seeing it early, the surprise of it, combined with some personal stuff I was going through. I was just on like an emotional roller coaster at that time. And I'm just like, oh God, somebody find that footage and delete it, please.
So if anyone listening works for Sony marketing,
clear your browser, email that to
Buffalo Ghostbusters at
info at buffaloghostbusters.com.
It was the whole leading up to the movie release, you know, the trailers, teasers, obviously merchandise, tie-ins. For me, it was very, very much personal and more meaningful because, I mean, I joined the group back in 2019. I think just before the new teaser was announced, and that. And just being able to talk to people about something that I'm passionate about on a daily basis, it just made the end result of seeing Afterlife with people that I respect, joy, and love. It was just, it felt really good. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, seeing the movie with Dan at the premiere and then actually going to the premiere in New York City.
And the drama of that too, because your ticket wasn't scanning in at New York Comic Con.
yeah, that was a little nerve wracking, but you know, made it through, and it all worked out, and it was an amazing experience, and obviously it's something that I will never ever forget, and be grateful to the group, and just yeah, and now to James to basically be able to relive all that stuff. Thanks.
Thank you. The stuff, just a little bit, it's the stuff at FanFest. We knew Jason was going to direct. He's walking around, he's talking with the fans. And that was like the next big thing was, you know, Jason handing the keys over to this. Jason, here you go.
Yeah. So James, we did have some fans as part of the contest for these signed books that we're going to give away, courtesy of you.
Yeah.
So we did have a few questions for just, I guess, a bit of a Q&A here. So okay, if you
great.
If you could rank the four Ghostbusters films, what would your ranking be?
Okay. This is going from best to least best.
I like that phrasing. Not worst, least best. Very good.
You're right. So, oh man. Okay, dude. All right. I won't cop out on this. I'll do it for real. So the first at the top is the original Ghostbusters. And then I would probably say Ghostbusters 2. then I would put Afterlife and then Answer the Call.
Okay. I think that's probably a pretty popular ranking. If you could be any character from one of any of the four Ghostbusters movies, who would it be and why?
I'd be Janosch because he lives on the Upper West Side. He seems to have a secure job. I like his wardrobe. He wears a lot of cool stuff. That's kind of the dream, to live on the Upper West Side and work in a museum. So
I like it.
I think that would be cool.
I don't think anybody could have called somebody going off board with Janosch on that question. I love it.
Buzzing like flies to capability.
So if I can interject for 2 seconds, when we did the screening at Comic-Con, there was actually a guy dressed as nanny version of Janosch carrying a fake baby.
I think he had a real baby, dude.
Oh, no, you're right. It was a real baby.
It was a real baby.
They asked what the baby's name on his scene. All he said was, "The baby."
It's the baby. That guy was awesome.
Yeah.
The next question is from Max Cerna, who is one of our winners, by the way. Just so everybody knows, the winners were randomly selected. We assigned everybody a number and then picked them. So Max Cerna, you are one of the winners. We'll be in touch with you. So James, if you had been in Ray's place, what would have been the form of the Destructor?
Okay. So we're assuming that this is happening right now, and I'm this
first thing that pops in your head. Right now.
Axl Rose.
The copy of his book.
No one would be able to defeat a 125-foot tall Axl Rose. Humanity would be doomed.
I'll give this guy a little blow, he'll be okay.
God,
when we get this guy laid, we won't have any trouble. It's okay.
No, maybe I would pick Axl Rose because then he wouldn't show up for 15 years.
Hey, there you go.
But so, everyone would forget.
Yeah, but if we're going for real, what if I was on top of the building and they're like, choose the form of the thing, what am I thinking about? Adam West.
Adam West from Batman. Adam
in
West.
Full Batman gear.
I think it would be Adam West from, like, you know, maybe
his Family Guy.
No, like
Mayor Adam West.
One of his, like, you know, from one of his Facebook posts, you know, from he's like, oh, I'm hanging out with some deer in Montana. I don't know. But yeah, that's tough because it's like I'm trying to put myself in them. I don't know. Yeah, it's something goofy like that, probably.
Okay. So what is, and Eric has a very good follow-up to this question. What is, in your opinion, the most obscure or difficult to find fact that you found while researching this book?
The script for the missing script.
This is what I think. Like, I'm not sure exactly. Okay, when my initial response to that question is like, I interviewed Yaphet Kotto because I had heard that he turned down a role in Ghostbusters. and that he also turned down a role in Conan the Barbarian around the same time. And I was like, oh, cool. I'll talk to him and see what he's got to say, you know, about this, because I'm sure it's an interesting story. So I emailed him, and he was like, yeah, you know, James, I've never really told this story before, but I'll tell it to you because, you know, whatever. I guess he was like, yeah, now's the time to tell it. And I'm kind of preparing myself, like, you know, this could be a heavy story. Like, what if this is a, you know, I got to, okay, let me, you know, kind of center myself and be like, and it was like, you know, it's like, I want you to record the phone call too. And like, you know, I want a copy of the recording. And I was like, okay, this could get heavy. So then he's like,
what was his water?
Like, all right. He's like, the reason I turned down Ghostbusters is the reason I turned down all these science fiction parts after I did Alien is because I've been being visited by aliens my whole life. And every time I do one of these movies, they start showing up again. And I don't want that. And, you know, I was like, oh my God. Okay. So that to me was like, you know, I to me that's like, and he was like, listen, Ghostbusters, I read the script, it's all real, this is real stuff, it was written by someone who understands all this stuff real. And I was like, yeah, you know, Dan Aykroyd does believe all this stuff. So to me, that's like, that was like, I could, that was the last thing I could have imagined ever encountering when I started work on this book. I did not know that Yaphet Kotto had turned down a role in Ghostbusters. I did not know he did that because of aliens. You know, I had no, you know, to me, that's the ultimate.
That, like, could have been a book all unto itself.
Yeah. And, you know, there was,
according to the audiobook.
He, you know, and to be fair, he was like a super nice guy. He was so cool. He was so nice and accommodating. And we talked for a really long time. So, you know, to me, that's kind of takes the cake. I can't really think of anything else that's like, you know, more obscure or weird.
Yeah, I was going to say, that fits the bill. That's obscure.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so we talked about the most obscure thing. So a follow-up to Artemis's question. The book's done. It's all out. We've talked about it. Is there something that you wish, you really wish you could have found? If there was something missing from the book that you really wanted to have it in there, what would it be?
Oh, I mean, I think there's a few things like that. There's a few things that there were definitely like rumors and you know, secondhand stories that I wish I could have, like, you know, fleshed out more or learned more about or you know, nailed down as whether it was factual or not. And, that's the, I mean, I really wish I had learned more about, or I could have learned more about, you know, I think we'd spoken about this a few episodes ago about, you know, John Landis potentially directing Ghostbusters, or like how real that was, or, another, now going back to another, person who, Clarence Williams III auditioned for a role in Ghostbusters. And I was like fascinated, like, oh, I got to hear what that was like, or what was he auditioning for? Unfortunately he was ill, you know, when I was working on the book, and he passed away. Like, gosh, I guess it was either right before the book came out or right afterwards, but there was definitely stuff like that. And also, you know, in Ghostbusters 2, when they're like, we were looking at this actor from the Days and Nights of Molly Dodd to play like the dark, evil Justin character. But then we saw Peter McNichol and we're like, let's make it a comedy character. I was interested in figuring out who that actor was and like, what was his, you know, how would he feel? How does that actor feel? Like, the people making Ghostbusters 2 saw you and wanted you, but then they went with Peter McNichol. Like, what is, you know, what's that like? Just, you know, And obviously, I would have loved to get a copy of the script where they go to Scotland and they're fighting fairies. Mm-hmm. You know,
we're still waiting for someone to email us a copy of that. Come on, guys.
So, info at buffaloghostbusters.com.
You know, I hope that makes sense. That's what you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next question is, was it a big transition from writing about the punk music scene to focusing on another genre altogether?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. You know, I guess I didn't, it wasn't that big of a transition. I think it was kind of like, it was sort of, I don't know. I guess I understood that I was going to be writing something that would reach a much broader audience. Many more eyes were going to be on this. So I kind of made it one of the big things I worked on for this book, in the terms of my own writing, was like, I got to try to be less pedantic. I got to be as clear and concise as possible, you know, without losing a sense of style, whatever sense of style I have. But it was also like, you know, and my wife helped me out with this, was like, I had to clean up some of the, you know, writing about, you know, punk rock is like, I would tend to use very abrasive language in certain points, not necessarily like blue language, but just like stuff where it's like, you could go a little bit easier here. You don't need to like, you know, in some sense, I guess it was like, you know, I really thought when I was working on my first book, like, oh, any day now they're going to break down the door and say, you can't do this. What are you, crazy? You can't write a book. Like, get out of here. So to me, that was more of the biggest, if I got that published and people didn't like, you know, they weren't burning it in parking lots and stuff. It's like, well, maybe I could write a book about Ghostbusters. I certainly feel passionate enough to do it. So
they only burned books in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade and Footloose.
Lucky for me.
By the way, I missed a comment here. So, hi, Colt from Australia. Thank you for joining us. Wow, you're far away. And our final question, and so this is our second winner of the signed book, comes from Terry Pryor, who says, we love displaying Ghostbusters-related books in private collections as well for public display at events when they do events as their franchise. Do you have any other publications in the works?
I do have another publication in the works. The book that I'm currently working on, I don't know if I've talked about this on air yet.
No, but, no.
Well, I have I've managed to resuscitate the book about Chinese Democracy by Guns N' Roses, and that will be published in 2025. By Backbeat Books. It will be the entire 15-year history of Guns N' Roses and Axl Rose trying to make that album. And I think it's really going to be pretty crazy. I think it's nice.
Just out of curiosity, when did you start writing that book?
I started writing that book
15 years ago.
No, it was only in 2018. I got really consumed with doing it in 2018, and I was interviewing people and writing it and figuring out how I was going to do it. And I couldn't find my publisher at the time was like, we don't want to do this for whatever reason. And I couldn't find any other publisher. And it was like, yeah. And I kind of felt like there was sort of a weird, like, I don't know. I felt like maybe the proposal wasn't right or something. I felt like I was getting weird feedback about the book proposal, and it was all really starting to bum me out. And then they dropped that teaser for Afterlife. And I was like, all right. But then I immediately, like, as I was finishing the Ghostbusters book, I was like, I don't usually do this. I usually take a break between books. I was like, I'm going to line up the next book like immediately. Like, what do I want to do? I was like, I'll try that Chinese Democracy book again. Why the hell not? And it worked now. So
nice. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So to wrap up the Q&A, even though we're on our sixth episode and we've all talked to you a whole hell of a lot, anybody else have any other final questions for James?
I do.
Josh, go first.
What is your favorite like prop from all of the Ghostbusters movies?
Now, does that include? Are we okay? Can we include the Ecto in that?
Of course,
it's a prop. So yeah.
Okay, I would say the Ecto, like the entirety of the car. That's always been my favorite, my absolute favorite thing. you know, I every time I went to Universal Studios Florida, I would get my photo next to one of the actors that they had. And I wish I could find, the last time I was there, which was a very long time ago, it was like 2003 or 2004. There's a great photo of me kind of barely touching it. And I'm looking off to the side because one of the Ghostbusters is yelling at me, "Don't touch the car." but I couldn't, you know, I couldn't help it. I was like, this thing is, man, I want to get my fingerprints all over it.
Oh yeah.
I know you're not supposed to do, but, yeah, that's the favorite prop.
Ecto. All right. That's a pretty good answer. I'll take it. <Thank you. laughs> I love it. I like, okay. I think everybody has their own favorite props. I mean, we all own
proton packs or multiple proton packs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Slot blowers. No one here has like an official Ecto though. Those things are,
well, not a 59 caddy.
Those things are pretty rare. The 59s.
Yeah. 59s are hard to come by.
Yep.
Plus it wouldn't do well in Buffalo snow here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It'll rust out in about a month.
So it'd be Rust City, is that what you're saying?
Oh, look, hey. Would go
from a pristine GB1 Ecto to Afterlife real quick.
1 week later.
Oh, the Afterlife. Good, your car. No, that was just winter.
Well, while we're on that subject, so James, before the book, on the scale, where would you classify yourself as a Ghostbusters fan? I got a two-part question. So would you say you're a casual fan? To this group of knuckleheads right here, where do you think you were on the list?
Well, I felt like I was definitely one of the knuckleheads.
Attaboy.
One of us.
You know, I also wasn't like
like the knuckleheads.
I feel bad because I never caught that bug of like, you know, I guess maybe because it looked so difficult to me. I never caught the, like, I got to build my own proton pack or I got to do a flight suit. You know, I think I saw, like, it used to be, at least when I first realized people were doing that, it looked like a lot of work. I was like, you know what? I'm going to just enjoy the movies and stuff and the imagery and behind the scenes stuff I can find. Nice. But yeah, I definitely felt like I was, you know, there was no, I never really felt like I ever got tired of Ghostbusters, you know, like other stuff in my life where I was like exhausted and I think I can't possibly look at this again. You know, that kind of didn't ever happen with Ghostbusters. So.
Okay. So part two of the question, you have metaphorically seen what happens to the cow after eating your hamburger. Has writing this book and diving into the history changed, you know, the amount that you like Ghostbusters, the franchise, fandom, anything? Has it made it, you know, increased the love? Has it soured it a little bit? You're in a very unique position, you know, like I said, to see behind the curtain. So did the magic, you know, remain?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't, I mean, yeah, I don't think it really changed my enjoyment. I mean, I guess maybe if anything, it deepened it. It gave me an opportunity to spend so much time just like reading about it, writing about it, and talking with people about it, you know. I would say, I guess it deepened it, and I guess made me more like appreciative in a lot of ways of, you know, I don't feel like I'm a little tired of hearing the Ray Parker Jr. song at this point, I haven't found that to be the case with that, with any, you know, with my previous two books. I didn't find that either. You know, I felt it was the same experience. Like, well, it's made me a little more appreciative, or I didn't feel like, you know, burn me out or anything.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Your book has definitely had the same effect on me as well. Just more appreciative of the many times that they tried to get one off the ground, but, you know, just didn't pan out. But all the hard work that people went into to get the first movie, second movie, Answer the Call, and Afterlife made to that effect. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you guys for saying that. Thank you for doing this whole thing. You know, it's really been amazing.
Yeah, it's been a super fun journey through the book.
I would like to paraphrase a line from It's a Wonderful Life. So here we go. Every time Ghostbuster plays, Ray Parker Jr. gets $75,000.
So, go ahead, Brent.
The book for me was just like a refresher on stuff I had forgotten about, but then so much more info that I didn't even know about. And as I wrote in a review after I had purchased the book, I had put, if you're not a fan of Ghostbusters, or if you're a fan of Ghostbusters, this is the book for you. If you're not a fan of Ghostbusters, this is the book for you.
Well, thank you. Know, I really appreciate that, because I feel like people would ask sometimes, you know, who are you writing this book for? Or like, they ask that about any of the books I've written. I'm like, I'm writing it for human beings. I want anyone, if you're not familiar with the subject matter, I want you to get something out of it. And if you're really deeply entrenched, hopefully you'll all get something out of it as well, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, it's gone into more depth than the documentaries that have come out or any articles that I've seen. But it was great. I just started reading something and being like, oh, hey, yeah, I remember that. I forgot Chris Pratt was talking about being in Ghostbusters.
So obviously we can buy the book everywhere. We have the QR code up there. But what libraries can we? I know libraries are they sound very near and dear to you. So
they are.
What libraries can we get the book at?
Well, if you give me a moment here, I can pull up a list of all the libraries. I wish, now it's not it's definitely at the Denver Public Library. It's at the New York Public Library. It's at the Queens Public Library. It's at the Library of Congress. This is all the stuff I can tell you offhand.
It's in Justin's library, my library.
That'd be really cool to read it in the New York Public Library.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Room and
that's a bucket list thing.
Congress.
Yeah. Okay. Let me read off the list here of public. Now it's in a lot of, university libraries and college libraries, but I'm just going to read the list of public libraries it's in.
Columbia.
So it's in Denver Public, the Indianapolis Public Library, the Allen County Public Library, which is in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Lee County Library, which is in Florida. It's at the Cleveland Public Library, New York Public Library, Queens Public, the Newport Public Library in Oregon, King County Library in Washington State. It's also at the part of the Snow Isle Libraries, also in Washington State. And it is in the Eskews and Holtz Library Services in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, and how can we go about getting this in our public libraries? If, say, I want to get this in my library for other people to be able to get their hands on,
Just ask your library to order it or to buy it. They should either call them up, or maybe they might have a form online, you know, where you can make
just
a request.
Walk into the library with like 10 copies.
Just like, these are yours now.
And a lot of libraries do take donations like that. Love donation. Yep.
True.
So yeah. I guess that's going to about wrap this up. It's been a very fun 6 episodes. Thank you to everyone who has listened and followed us knuckleheads along. If you haven't yet read the book, please go ahead and purchase it at the QR code, or, you know, like libraries we just mentioned. Amazon. Yep. And very important, though, we did want to bring attention to the acknowledgments section. If anyone really enjoyed this that much and would like to contribute to some causes that James is passionate about, we have some causes that we're going to put up on screen here, yep, and we'll put them on our page as well for those just listening.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's Friedrich's Ataxia Research Alliance, the National Center for Transgender Equality, and American Friends Service Committee. So if you would like to contribute to any of those to thank James for being as awesome as he is, we highly recommend doing that. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, guys. And thank you again for doing this whole thing. It's been awesome and a lot of fun. And I appreciate everybody who tuned in and anybody who's ever taken time to check the book out. I appreciate it. And here, have my gratitude.
Awesome.
Thank you, James.
Thank you for writing it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good night.
All right.